Today is the third episode of the season 2 of Impact Africa by Faith Flows. I'm so excited to be back here right now. I'm Vanessa, the voice behind the podcast. On this episode, I have someone who at one point in her life hit the rock bottom, but out of curiosity and by grace found her feet again. She was able to disrupt the status quo, reinvented her life, and has become an international speaker of repute, Nikki Verd.
Good to have you here, Nikki.
Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you for having me.
Nikki
wrote a book, and in that book she said something profound. In a world of fractured certainties, battered economies, and robotic invasion, you have to be clear as crystal about your own mandate and what matters to you. You must be able to confront yourself with uncomfortable questions. All right, let's get to hear from you, your story. That lowest moment of your life, how did it actually happen?
My story, as you say, I guess it's relatable to a lot of people. And so back in 2016, I was retrenched. You know, I got laid off from a job that was like life. I was holding on to life, you know, with that job because I had nothing else going other than that job for me. And I had two kids. And so that was my livelihood. But, you know, life happened and the job was gone in an instant. I went to work one day and my boss called me in for a meeting. I thought that it was just a meeting to catch up, you know, with what has been happening because he was not around. But by the end of that meeting, I was jobless. You know, he told me, we have been doing some restructuring and sorry, we have decided to let you go. And that was it. So that day and the weeks, you know, even the months that followed were some of the most difficult time of my life. It was very hard for me, you know, to actually say was the most difficult time of my life would be an understatement because I did not see how I was going to recover from that. You know, I did not anticipate the retrenchment happen. I didn't see it coming. So I had plans, you know, for myself, for my kids, for my job, plans to further my education and a whole lot of plans, but they were all. So when a job is taken, it's not just a job that is taken. It's a whole lot of dreams that you have that are taken away, plans you have that are taken away. You know, the future you are envisioning for yourself and for your kids is like, all of that is taken away in an instant. And so, but nonetheless, as time progressed, my frustrations and my, you know, and my pain became curiosity. I started asking questions as like, but what is really driving retrenchment? You know, why are people, so many people losing their jobs? Because after I lost my job, I started hearing a lot of news about people losing their jobs. If I turn on the TV, I will hear about company A or company B, you know, laying off a lot of people. And I thought to myself, okay, apparently this is not just happening to me, you know. So I wanted to research and find out what was really behind so many people losing their job. I know that right now, because of COVID-19, many people are losing their job. But back at the time when I lost my job back in 2016, that was like the beginning of the fourth industrial revolution. And there were so many companies adopting these new technologies and machines were replacing people. So that was literally what happened. And when I started researching, I was like, oh, wow, there's these concepts about artificial intelligence, about automation, about machines replacing people at work, about the whole fourth industrial revolution. That was my first time to come across these concepts.
Breathe, feel, live, love, learn, grow in faith, and make an impact. Introducing the new faithflows.org app, a new kind of social network that is dedicated towards uplifting the well-being of individuals and communities around the world, where believers can connect, learn new skills, teach, inspire others, listen to Faith Radio, and volunteer for humanitarian missions. Download the Faith Flows app today and start living your best life now.
So you have been listening to Impact Africa podcast series on Faith Flows Radio, and podcasts have been charting with Nikki Verd. Let me come back to you, Nikki.
I'd like to ask you a question. From what you've said so far, I'm able to deduce that the reason, perhaps, why you were laid off was because you were not possessing the right skills that your company was looking for at the time to match up with the coming fourth industrial revolution.
No, not really. It really had nothing to do with that. I was not given details as to the type of restructuring that was happening within the company. I really cannot explain because I didn't ask questions. Maybe I should have asked when it happened, but I think I was too shocked to even ask questions. What type of restructuring was going on. All I was told is that my position was no longer needed because of this restructuring that was going on. So it was very difficult for me. I did not know even how to process the retrenchment. And one of the things that added to the pain of me not being able to survive at that time, or feeling despair and all of the things, that it was exactly 1 year after my divorce that I lost my job. So I was on my own with two kids. And so it was just like pain compounded upon pain that I've already been experiencing as a result of divorce. So that is a story I don't want to get into right now. But it was another dark period in my life. And I felt like, okay, where to from here? What next? And I felt very, very broken. I don't even know if that fits the description of the things I felt. The future seemed dark. I did not even know what to do with myself, or how I was going to feed my kids and how I was going to survive on my own and things like that. But as time went on, you know, the pain and the frustration and the anger, it became some sort of curiosity where I started asking questions as to, okay, what is driving retrenchment at the rate in which retrenchment is happening?
Okay. So before we get into talking about the discovery you made, how were you able to manage your life after your retrenchment? How were you getting it together? You had no money, no work, and you had children, and there were other things going on in your life at that time. How were you able to manage your life at that point in time?
Like, I had to get into some sort of business. I was selling things on the street, like accessories and things like that, to survive. At one point, business was taking a lot of my time. I had no time for myself or for kids or to even write the things that I was finding on the internet, because I became very fascinated about these things. I wanted to write about them. So I had to survive. At the same time I'm doing this research, I have to put food on the table. So I was selling on the street, and it came a point where I was like, the street life is a bit too demanding for me. I do not have time to focus on this research I'm being fascinated with. So I kind of left the street and I learned how to make African jewelries with beads.
Okay.
I think so. I don't know if that's the word. I would sell at the same time doing my research and writing about it. So the money from the business, so to say, was what was keeping me and the kids surviving at the time, while trying to also understand what is happening in the world of tech and things like that. So to answer your question, I got into some business, selling on the street, creating things and selling them online. Literally, that was how I was surviving.
Now let's get to the part of what your curiosity made you do. I'm asking because a lot of persons come to the point in their lives, sometimes you do not expect this unfortunate situations to crop up, storms happen, things happen without you expecting them. What did your curiosity push you into doing? And what are some of the findings you made during your research?
Okay, great. So as I got on the internet and started doing this research, I already mentioned earlier that concepts like artificial intelligence started jumping on me. And initially it sounded like a foreign language because I've never been paying attention to the world of technology. I have no background in technology, but I became very fascinated by these concepts. What is artificial intelligence? How does it affect work, and how does it affect people, losing their jobs? I became very fascinated by the whole robotics and automation. How does it work and things like that? Then the fourth industrial revolution in itself was about the new emerging technologies that are disrupting work and businesses and life in general. So I just became very fascinated by jobs that were once done by humans that are now being done by machines. When a company let go of so many of these people, most of these roles and whatever they were doing, the system automated them. They're being automated, right? I was like, wow. So I started writing some of these things on social media. Initially, it was a way for me to escape the pain I was feeling from retrenchment. But this thing just kept going even much and much deeper. It was like a rabbit hole that I dug myself in, and I just kept digging and digging. More people on social media now, I realized that a lot of people wanted to know more. I was not the only clueless person, which gave me some sort of relief. I was like, wow, I wasn't the person, only clueless person about this. I realized so many people are now asking me questions as though I'm the expert here, which may, and I don't even know much about it. So I kept researching, and it evolved from writing those social media posts to me starting a blog. I started blogging about it, like writing in-depth articles about technology and how it's changing the world and how it's changing work in general and how the future of work will perhaps look like and all of these things. So it came a point in my writing where I realized that looks like there is a lot of people are hungry for this knowledge, for this type of knowledge. And I felt like, I think someone should write a book about this. I didn't think that someone would be me.
Let me cut in here. Why didn't you think you were qualified to write a book? Why didn't you think you could translate the ideas that were running through your mind into a book?
I guess because I've always been fascinated by writers and authors, and I thought that you have to be a really, really special person and really, really smart to write a book. And somehow in my own mind, I did not qualify that. I didn't qualify as smart or special or anything like that. I just thought I was just a normal person. So my lack of a degree played into that, with where I was thinking, okay, book writing is probably for very smart people or academicians. I allowed those self-doubt to really stop me for a while. But as time went on, I couldn't keep giving these excuses. I just felt like, well, you're already writing articles about it. So it just evolved from those articles sort of organically into a book. But initially, I doubted myself about the ability to write a book so much. But somehow I gave into that. And today I do have a book, and a lot of my friends are surprised that I wrote a book. And all the time I would tell them, you know what, I'm more surprised than all of you. But all of this, it just became like, when an idea takes hold of you, you either do it or you become miserable. And I realized that if I don't write a book, I'm going to become miserable. And so I decided to write a book about it, which is titled of the book, as we spoke earlier, it's Disrupt Yourself or Be Disrupted. And I wanted it to be like a lesson from my own life. When I had a job, I was very much relaxed. I wasn't thinking of anything outside of that. I wasn't thinking of plan B. And someone disrupted my life. So if you don't start thinking about your own life and disrupting certain processes that you're sitting on right now, someone else is going to disrupt your life. So that is basically what my book is about and how I got into where I am. And so the whole idea about disrupting yourself is that a lot of people are not asking questions. A lot of people are not curious enough. People are just going through life more on like autopilot. Things we saw great grandparents do, we just continue doing that. Our great grandparents pass them on to our parents. Our parents pass them on to us, and we are passing them on to our children. And the main idea of that keeps going on is that you should go to school, you should get a certificate, and then you should get a job, and you live happily ever after. That might have been true 50 years ago, but it's no longer the case now. You can go to school and come out and you won't find a job. You can go to school and come out and all you have collected all those years will be student debt. Or you can go to school and come out with certificates that are no longer relevant. But we keep hearing these things of going to school, get a certificate and get a job as if it is still very relevant today. But that is no longer the case. So I want people to start asking themselves questions. Are you in school right now? Ask yourself. The certificate or the degree I'm pursuing, by the time I finish in 4 years' time, will it still be relevant for the market? Those are uncomfortable questions. But when you ask these questions, you can disrupt yourself. Otherwise, you will come out and you realize that you are not relevant for the market. You've taken a loan. Maybe your parents have sold land or they've sold a house, and you've had this degree that you will never, ever used in your lifetime. For people that are in jobs like myself, I was, and I'm very comfortable in that position, ask yourself, the job I'm currently doing, can I be replaced by a machine? Can a machine do what I'm doing? Can I be replaced by a robot? And if you see that your job is not that safe or not that stable, perhaps you can consider moving entirely into a different industry, right? And I usually use an example of accountants. Accountants were the thing in the past, but right now there are softwares that can do accounting way better than any human can. And so if you are sitting very comfortably as an accountant, or you are in school studying accounting, ask yourself, am I really going to be relevant in the next 4 to 5 years or in the next 5 to 10 years? You know, so it's about people disrupting themselves, because there is no neutral ground. It's either you will disrupt yourself or someone else is going to disrupt you, just like it happened for me. And so literally, with just one thing led to another, and I found myself in the tech space in which I am now, talking about how tech is changing work and the future of work and what we should prepare ourselves, especially mentally. Most of the work has to be done mentally, right? So this is how I really got into the space in which I am now. And Okay. It's been an amazing journey for me. You know, I totally enjoy what I do. I love what I do. And I like the whole idea that they're uncomfortable conversations, because people are like, are you saying we shouldn't go to school anymore? Are you saying certificates are not, you know, all of those things. But nonetheless, it is about us being curious and asking questions rather than just pushing the narrative that has always been go to school, get a certificate, get a job. No, you can go to school, get a certificate, start a business. You can go to school, get a certificate, start a shop next door or whatever, you know, and things like that. It's not just about jobs, because companies are doing more with less humans. It's not like humans are completely being phased out, but the truth is that a company that had, for example, 10,000 employees 10 years ago, that company is doing very well with 30% of that workforce.
Now, at that point in your life, at that point in time, when you doubted yourself, your ability to take up such huge task, writing that book, what lessons did you learn from it that you can share with someone listening to you?
The big lesson for me was that I believe that the way you see yourself and your mindset is more important than any certificate that any educational institution can afford you, because sometimes people rely on their certificate much more than they rely on their purpose, or much more than they rely on their mindsets or on themselves. And so because I lacked this certificate, it sort of pushed me to do things I didn't think were possible, because I felt like, okay, let me just give it a try and see. Maybe if I had this certificate, it probably would have even restricted me more, because I probably would have been looking at a life that was geared only towards whatever I studied in school. I don't know what that could have been. Could have been science, could have been maths, could have been, I don't know, history. I would have probably been focused more on that, and writing would never have forced that. Sometimes you can probably have a certificate in one thing, but your purpose lies completely outside of that certificate. You may lack a certificate entirely like myself, but when God has given you a purpose and an ability to do something, you can do that.
There's this thing I've observed in the African setting that you only amount to something when you have a degree or certificate. And sometimes those who don't have the degrees are looked down on as not being able to contribute to the society. So your story so far is able to let people who see themselves or find themselves in that situation where they think, I'm not fortunate enough to acquire a certificate or a degree, that it is not about acquiring the degree, but it's about purpose, discovering what you can do and trying to see how you can do it, even when the certificate or the degree is not there. So it's a powerful one, profound.
Because of that experience, I tell people that when you have a dream and you believe in something, focus on that thing. Don't worry on how the execution will finally happen, because if this was really meant for you, it will happen. You know, vision goes before provision. That is one thing that I have come to experience in my own life, and I believe so strongly in it. Hold on to the vision. The provision will come.
Right. Great. Like, I'm enjoying this conversation, really. Now, since that time, you've gone on to become a preacher of the gospel of disrupting the status quo, reinventing yourself to be able to fulfill the very mandate you're called for. You've been able to promote the gospel of technology. Yeah, especially now that we are in the fourth industrial revolution. How do you think people can embrace this new and reinvent themselves? Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's been quite a fascinating journey for me. And I just want people to start having, you know, uncomfortable conversations about seeing the world of work and even our lives in general. You know, before, maybe in the days of our parents, if you went to school and came out, you were almost guaranteed to have a job. But that is no longer the case in our days today. You know, they are graduates with out there with relevance. But the job market is completely different. Things have changed. Technology has changed everything. A lot of companies are doing way more today with less employees than they did 10 years ago. An organization that had maybe 10,000 employees in their workforce, they can do now with just 5,000 or even less than that because of automation and technologies. So people need to be aware of these changes happening and start asking themselves, you know, maybe even what other means can I make a living other than just having a job, rather than, because I know, especially in Africa,
we are baptized with this mindset of, you know, we have to earn a living through a job and nothing else, you know, but that has to change. We need to embrace other means of earning a living. You know, entrepreneurship is actually rising very much in Africa now because a lot of young people are waking up to this reality. And so if anyone is listening to us and they have tried everything to get a job and it's not working, well, try something else. Try entrepreneurship. Try something on online. You could create your own brand and do stuff on the internet, because as much as technology is destroying jobs, it is also giving us a lot of opportunities to do our own things online. You know, a lot of people today are starting podcasting. A lot of people today are starting different type of businesses online. A lot of people today are, you know, online models, Instagram models, where they do their thing and advertise products on their pages and get paid for that. So there's so many different ways, thanks to digitization, that people can earn a living instead of just focusing on that mindset of I'm going to get a job or I'm waiting to get a job. There's so much that people can do online. So that is one aspect of one advantage of the digital disruption. As much as it's killing jobs, it's also giving a lot of opportunities, especially for young people to create their own thing. You know, I think even maybe in Nigeria, there are a lot of YouTubers that are making a living completely off from their channels, you know, from creating content and putting it out there. So those opportunities are there for people to really consider. I like the way you put it, me being the preacher of technology and all of that. So literally, that is really what I preach about, you know, that's really what I preach about, for people to really be open-minded and not just put all their eggs in one basket as in regards to getting a job. Jobs don't exist today the way it existed 10 years ago.
So for me, it's much more about leveraging on the internet, you know, to do whatever it is that you're doing. There are examples that I've given before in some of my talks, and I give like really basic, simple examples so that people don't get caught up in the whole tech and the idea of big words and not really understanding what we're talking about. I usually just say, for example, right, if you are, say, someone who sells diapers for babies, right? You can start a Facebook page and start creating content around pregnancy and around new mothers or motherhood in general, and empower or educate people about taking care of babies, you know, empowering maybe younger women who are having child for the first time and telling them what to expect, or what people who are pregnant for the first time should expect. And then you create the content around that. And when people find value in what you're creating, then they turn to buy whatever you're selling. You know, if you are into baby things, not just diapers, but generally baby clothing or anything like that. So for me, that is one example of digital entrepreneurship. You know, even though you might have a physical store, but because we are so connected in the digital world, you can create content around what you sell in your physical store so that you can draw people in into what you're doing. So that for me is one aspect of digital entrepreneurship. Then we can go deeper into the likes of businesses that are fully digital, you know, maybe aspects of banking now that are fully digital. That one now is on the bigger aspect of entrepreneurship, where certain things that used to be done at a physical bank branch are now fully being done online. So it's a concept that embodies people even on the streets and people right up the corporate world. That is the way I see it.
Let me talk to you about it. How do you think that this concept of digital entrepreneurship has fared in Africa on the larger scale? What I mean, Africa, I'm not talking about the corporate bodies. I'm not talking about the big institutions. I'm talking about the persons, the middle income earners in Africa. Do you think that when it comes to digital entrepreneurship, they're really faring well in the usage of some of these products that come out from this particular industry?
I think that that's actually a great question. I think that in terms of Africa faring well, we are still a little bit behind, you know, in really leveraging the internet and being able to function as businesses on the internet, or even as middle income earners on the internet. A lot of youth in Africa still use internet for entertainment. They don't understand that they can use this to create something for themselves. You know, for example, there's a lot of content on the internet, but you see that content that is geared towards Africa and Africa's problems or solutions is kind of lacking. Most of the content on the internet is coming from the West, right? Thank God for people like you that have now podcasts that is looking to empower and impact Africa. But these are some of the things that many youth can leverage on. They can look, how can I become part of this revolution? How can I become part of what is happening in the digital space? Can I start perhaps a blog? Maybe, you know, rather than hanging around my friends and we gossiping all day, I can start a blog and talk about these things on the internet. That is creating content. Maybe I can start a YouTube channel, right? And discuss these things that I sit with my peers at maybe saloons or bars or wherever and discuss. Maybe I can start discussing these things online. That is creating content and that is, you know, changing the African, you can change the African narrative based on what you are putting online. So in terms of entrepreneurship and creating content, I think that Africa is still a little bit behind, but a lot of us are already putting ourselves out there. For example, what you're doing, I think that is very impressive. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Powerful. Perfect. We're still talking about disrupting the status quo and reinventing yourself, your life. Now, I've been talking with Nikki Vert here, and so much has been said. Now, you should be able to start asking yourself those uncomfortable questions, because it is in the process of you asking these uncomfortable questions that you will be able to realize that I am not satisfied with the point where I am right now, and you're able to take another step, disrupt the status quo, get uncomfortable with the situation that you find yourself, and then you embrace the new, which sometimes might be difficult, but you've been able to do it, and that's a great lesson for anyone listening to us right now. So at this point in time, I want to say a very big thank you to you, Nikki Ved, for finding time to come share this powerful story with us, and also use your story to actually help someone in their journey to disrupting the status quo and reinventing their lives. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Well, I guess my concluding remarks would be Google it. Don't be afraid to ask Google questions. They will not laugh at you. Your friends can laugh at you. Your family can laugh at you, but Google will not laugh at you. Ask Google questions. And the answers to some of your problems will be found in Google. So basically, that's what I can really say. Reinventing yourself requires you to look stupid sometimes.
Yeah, all right. So you heard her. Google should be your friend. Do not be comfortable with the status quo. All right, thank you once again, Miss Nikki. And at this point in time, I want to say thank you to you who has been listening. And I want to believe that her story and where she is right now should be something that you can build on. Remember, you have all it takes to disrupt the status quo. Start by asking yourself those uncomfortable questions and try to reinvent. I want to believe you've learned something profound that you're going to act in. And please do not hoard this information. Do well to share it with somebody. You might never know who you are saving, who you are helping. All right? So, Impact Africa is a production of Faith Flows. Do well to connect with us on www.faithflows.org and on all of our social media platforms. All right? So, see you again on the next episode. Until then, have yourself a lovely time. Vanessa Richard is my name. Enjoy.
Faith Flows is a nonprofit Christian organization. Support us today at faithflows.org/donate.